Welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining me today. Dean's off, but I've got my sidekick, and that looks like Cooper, the Highlander cow, is hanging out right next to me over here at the desk. So good to have Cooper along for the ride today and so many other things to talk about as well. First and foremost, it's Weather and Ag in Focus, so we should probably hit on the weather. I would say most everybody is out there doing their best to enjoy the day. And no lie, this is probably one of the nicest ones we've had for a while. Still feels just a little bit of cool, but not bad. So if you happen to be enjoying the afternoon, I would say continue if you would. Right now we are looking to hit highs today, probably about 57-ish or so, might go a little bit higher. And mostly sunny, little cloud in the sky, not too bad. And winds are much lighter. Yesterday got kind of out of hand. Happy to have much lighter winds, probably in that northwest 5 to 10 miles an hour, maybe some gusts a little bit higher, but not terrible. So as always, I would ask if you are listening and you want to send in a road report, would love to have you do that. Although I think just today is pretty nice out there. So if you want to reach the show today, you certainly can. Our phone number is 701-293-9000. That's the JLA insurance phone line. And you can always send me emails, ag@flagfamily.com. You can leave them for Dean in his inbox at weather@flagfamily.com. And the streams are up and rolling. And so you will be able to find us today on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV. And you can find us at those places, WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus. In fact, that's where some great conversations happen. I had pictures of our field from Friday, a mason jar, a quart jar that had seeds in it. And so many folks were helping us do our math on Friday about how many seeds might be in a jar. So thanks for being a part of it. Speaking of those wheat seeds in a jar, we are definitely seeing more progress being made in planting. Certainly not exclusive just to Western North Dakota. There's more and more folks that are getting a little bit of work done. I talked to my home farm down in South Central North Dakota today. Not a lot happening there yet, kind of a slow rolling start. Most folks are over the big hump of calving, but certainly taking their time because soil temperatures haven't really warmed up yet. We are looking to see a little bit of rainfall later on this month, and so folks are going to plan around that. But we've got wheat in the ground. I would speculate there'll be some sugar beets that go in later this week as temperatures warm, and we'll probably see more activity as well. So if you're in the field, if you've got tidbits to share of what you're seeing or finding, we'd love to hear from you. And again, you can always give me a call, 701-293-9000, and additionally, drop an email if you'd like. Well, we always hear that April showers bring May flowers, and I found some tidbits about weather and April showers that I thought I'd share today. April is the fifth wettest month in the United States. Well, it's the fourth month, but when it comes to how much rainfall happens, it's the fifth wettest. That's in the U.S., and that's based on long-term averages. June, historically, is the wettest with well over 3 inches of rain. Now, this is looking on average across the nation, that average of 3 inches of rain. We've had times where there's certainly been more. On April 30th, 2024, 17% of the contiguous U.S. was in a drought pattern. We've been looking at the drought monitor closely across this region and more, and we certainly know where some of those highest risk places are falling. The American Southwest is one of them. We do see probably a little less of a drought monitor going across the traditional corn state. That seems to be improving as we've seen some rains fall. In fact, an Iowa farmer reached out to me this morning. They were filling the planter, and it was only about 39 degrees, and they thought that was a little chilly out. But their soybeans that were going in the ground thought it was a little chilly out, too. Now, in 2017, the U.S. had 58 million acres of irrigated cropland. Now, irrigation isn't always common in this area, but more than you might think. Fun fact, for those of you, when you travel through Oaks, North Dakota, NDSU actually has an irrigation research station down there. We do have irrigation in different parts of the state. We certainly see more as we go into Minnesota, et cetera. But in total across the U.S., again, that's 58 million acres. Agriculture accounts for 70% of fresh water use worldwide. We are very much into food production with fresh water. That's no doubt left behind on what we're doing there. And high-yielding corn, which many of us want to see and are encouraging more and more of, high-yielding corn requires 22 to 30 inches of water per year. Water is indeed its most critical during early reproductive stages on the corn. So happy to hear just a few tidbits that go along with weather, but we never want to leave out things that are happening in agriculture. And to me, ag and food certainly go together, sometimes with good or bad results. So here's something maybe you hadn't heard. Peeps, you know, the little yellow marshmallow confections. Okay, I'm sure some of you are voting already whether you like Peeps or not. I'm on the yes, I'll eat Peeps bandwagon. I'm okay with that. Addison, you?
So possibly controversial opinion here. I've never actually had a Peep.
We can fix that. We can fix that.
But I have drank a couple years ago. Pepsi did an Easter Peepsy, I think.
Oh, no.
And that was the best Pepsi I've ever drank.
I'll tell you right now, that just made my teeth hurt thinking how sweet that might have been.
Yeah, that was especially burny.
Okay, so then the other question, well, this isn't necessarily going to apply because you've never tried Peeps. But there is the difference between having Peeps soft and fresh like marshmallows or letting them get kind of hard and chewy. So
I think I'd rather have them fresh.
Well, it looks like I'm going to have to bring some Peeps in.
Aren't they like marshmallows?
They are like marshmallows. By the way, they make a tremendously great s'more, regardless of their color or shape.
Ooh.
Yeah, they do. So there's another heads up for you. But here's something. Promised Land Dairy is featuring a new seasonal variety of sweet marshmallow milk to kick off their spring. And it's generally the delectable marshmallow treat of Peeps you find in an Easter basket. But nope, this Peeps will debut its sweetness in the form of a flavored milk. So limited time, it's a sweetened milk that allows customers to have the best of both worlds, milk and Peeps.
It's like after you've drank, it's like after you've eaten a bowl of cereal and then you have all the cereal milk left over.
Yeah, like the Cinnamon Toast Crunch milk.
They could sell that as its own thing. I'd buy it.
Well, they do. It's called rum chata, and you buy it in a liquor store. But I've been told. So, yes, that's one way to look at it. But as a fan of Peeps, I might be willing to try a little bit. I'm not sure that I need like a half gallon or anything.
A full gallon.
Yeah, that maybe could be a lot.
That would be a lot.
There, I can tell already there are people who are trying to find out where they can buy it, and there are people trying to find out where they can protest it.
Now you can use that in a bowl of cereal and die before you finish the bowl.
There is generally a very distinct line whether you like Peeps or not at Easter time.
I feel like I would be on the line that would like.
I think you might like them, but I will tell you based on experience at great grandma's house as a child, I'm not a fan of those Orange Circus peanuts. These, my friends, are not the same thing.
Yeah, those are a little gross.
They just make your teeth hurt. Okay, so, but one of the other ubiquitous items that goes along with Easter, of course, is Easter eggs. And the White House generally has an Easter egg hunt on the front lawn. There is a farm from, it is the Braswell Family Farm in North Carolina that has supplied Easter eggs for a number of years. They first did this in 2022 and they supplied 18,000 eggs. In 2023, it was 30,000 eggs. And in 2024, it was 64,000 eggs. And it's not just that you pick up the eggs and drop them off. Oh, no, no. They started in late March last year. Daily transported eggs from the farm to a place called the Stocked Pot, which is a caterer in the Winston-Salem, North Carolina region, where they were hard-boiled and dyed and packages and then driven to a warehouse in Virginia before they were brought to Washington, D.C. right before the event. They boiled and dyed more than 6,000 eggs a day. I'd like to see the size of the pots that went along with this egg dyeing and boiling situation.
Very large.
Very large. Like, imagine remember those big timpani drums that you had in band in high school?
Yeah.
You'd like that size, fired by propane or something, I'm sure.
Probably, yeah.
So they're pretty massive. Again, 6,000 eggs per day for 8 days, by the way, to get all those eggs ready to go. And there are signature colors that belong specially to the White House Easter egg roll. Not all eggs can be colored the same. Some have to be dyed multiple times to get to the right shade. Apparently, we're very picky about our egg color when they go to the White House. So if you are considering an egg roll for your Easter hunt this weekend, which, by the way, weather should be nice, you could probably pull it off. I'm not sure if you need 64,000 eggs, but if you did, you should have started sooner, I'm afraid. It's going to take a lot to get you there. Well, as I've said, you can feel free to give a call today. You can drop emails at getflagfamily.com and make sure to stick with us. Guest today is Christy Friesen. She farms in the Peace Valley of Alberta. For anybody who doesn't know where the Peace Valley of Alberta is, it's time to get on a map because it's a long way from here. You can get there from here, but it's going to take you a little while. We're going to talk to Christy about what they raise on their farm, some of the constraints that they might have as far as their growing season, transportation to move grain and so forth. But I think there's a reason it's called the Peace Valley. I'd say it's probably a pretty nice area. So stick with us. We'll be back after the American Ag Network and your markets. Alrighty, folks, as we await our guest to join us today, a few other things that are going on agriculturally. One big one definitely is the fact that we are doing our Here We Grow project here this year coming into the summer of 2025, and we are going to be raising wheat. We'll be up near Gardner, North Dakota. Our plan is to be raising wheat for seed, and we'll be working with Jim and Michael Ulan. We were in the field with them 2 years ago as we did a soybean crop. We're looking forward to coming back into that this year. Lots of good reasons why we're going to wheat. One of the most is probably that, I don't know, I find wheat pretty darn tasty myself in a variety of ways. So we'll be sharing that journey. Our field isn't planted quite yet. The anticipation is that we might be able to get to planting later this week, but we're going to see what field conditions certainly do. And it's a matter of timing, right? If other fields are ready first, if there's something that the farm has to take care of, well, you just got to fall into line and take care of it when you can. Some of the folks that are going to be along for our journey this summer will be a couple of sponsors. One is Cotico Fuels and Propane. Looking forward to using them. In fact, Cotico is where I fill gas most often when I'm on the road through where I live in Hunter. And so thanks to those folks because they play a big part in what farmers do in order to get a crop in the ground for us. Secondly, Ellingson Companies. And the folks from Ellingson are more than just drainage. First of all, we know there are benefits to drain tile. But when it comes to removing water at the right time, why working with a trusted contractor gives you the best ROI? That's why you're looking at Ellingson. They are experts in the area. They have services like maintenance, repair, locating, drain tile design and installs, and so much more. So make sure to talk with those folks over at Ellingson for all of your drainage needs. And don't forget, we're getting ready for the field and things should go smoothly. And that includes your technology. Making sure that you have your technology up to date would include working with someone like Tech Support Farm. Chris Sherman over at Tech Support Farm can get you off and running, making sure that your grain bin sites are connected to your home farm and so many other things that need to be done. The thing I think about the most is Chris is helping me to make sure that my email is secure, that I'm not getting hacked, and that things are being taken care of behind the scenes. And that I appreciate. Sometimes I just don't have the chance to get all of that done, but Chris can help me stay on track with it. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is that's going on pretty prevalently or more so than normal has to do with calves. We are wrapping up a lot of the calving season. Even though calving can go on year-round in North Dakota, the majority of ours happens in the spring. We have folks that are going to calve all the way out till June, waiting to take advantage of nicer weather. But unfortunately, as beef prices rise, so do instances of cattle rustling. Yes, it's still alive and well. And when it comes to cattle rustling, why is it easy this time around? Because calves are little. Now, if there's two of you and you can distract mama cow because she's probably being more like a mama bear, you can actually pick up a calf and carry him away. Calves are easy to transport. They are probably tagged, not always, but often, especially if calves are found right away, they have an ear tag and they are often not branded. So those identifying marks are less prominent. So calves can be tossed in the back of a pickup and driven off. They are worth probably $800 to $1,000 a head. If you are a commercial registered herd, that value, especially for you, goes up. Whomever is taking them may not see quite the same value as you do. Then calves are easily stashed in a herd and others overlook them. North Dakota Stockmen's Association reminds folks to keep an eye out for unusual vehicles and activity in your neighborhood. That could, in fact, be someone checking out pastures and feedlots about swiping calves. There are rewards available. There's about a $14,000 reward for information on some missing calves in the central part of North Dakota. And if you have information, you are encouraged to call Corby Ward, who is the North Dakota State brand inspector. He's housed within the North Dakota Stockmen's Association out in Bismarck, and give them a call. They would be happy to take your information and investigate further, because missing property, even in the form of small, cute baby calves, needs to be returned to its rightful owner. So that's something we want to keep an eye out for. Now, while Addison and I are working diligently behind the scenes to see if we can get our guest to connect today, sometimes those things happen. I feel like it happens to us a lot, but, well, it just does happen. So I keep Addison on his toes in the background.
The show wouldn't be any fun to do if there was no challenge.
You know, if I wasn't sitting here and just completely panicking about trying to get something right, this would obviously not be the right show. So
we have fun here.
We have a lot of fun. And some of that fun includes bringing in assistant ag director interns, of which we will be having another one this month. Actually, we're going to have a whole group. I'll be in Beulah, North Dakota on April 30th, and we have a whole classroom of ag communication students who want to participate in the show that day. So I'm looking forward to working with those students. Additionally, if you are interested in applying, I want to have students throughout the summer months. So I'd like to have someone new each month join me, and you get to be my assistant during the show. We will not only be covering headlines like I just did, and more to come of those, by the way. We'll be discussing the weather. We'll be interviewing guests and so much more. Sometimes those interns wind up staying for sales meetings, helping to do some promo recordings, just the behind the scenes, whatever happens in radio. So whether you thought you had a future in farm broadcasting, in radio, or other media types, now is your chance to apply. If you have that interest, you go ahead and send me an email, ag@flagfamily.com. I would be happy to share the application with you and just drop it back in my inbox, and we can move on from there. And I always make sure we work to schedule a day where you don't have school or work or something like that, so it's a little less stress-free, or a little more stress-free, I should say, for the person who's helping us out that day. All right, time to check on the news. When we return, we might have guests, or I might have more headlines to go through. We'll find out right after this. Well, we all know there's a lot happening in farming every day, and that's maybe what happened to our guest today. She might be kind of busy getting some things ready as well. Even though Christy Friesen is in the Peace Valley of Alberta, which is significantly further north than where we live, that doesn't mean that folks aren't trying to get things accomplished and get ready for their spring planting season. Meanwhile, there's still plenty happening down here. So for farmers who are literally getting ready to go into the field right now, Cooper, my sidekick, my Highlander cow next to me here in the studio today, he and I have some new herbicide products that are coming out that not everyone is familiar with. Remember that if you are thinking of using something new on the farm this year in the realm of herbicide, even insecticides and fungicides, have the conversation with your retailer or read through the labels and make sure you know that you're not just switching product names, but modes of action. If we are continuously using the same mode of action in the same spot, we are going to eventually build tolerance of the plant to be controlled by that particular product. It's no different than if I went on a binge and stayed on antibiotics for months at a time. That would, in fact, cause a problem for me, because my body would begin to just synthesize, metabolize, and it really wouldn't be effective for me anymore. Same thing happens in herbicides. So a couple of new things that are out. AMVAC is bringing a product called Zalo. This is a post-emergent product, and it is for glufosinate-resistant soybeans because it contains glufosinate, known under the brand name Liberty, as well as quizalofop. And you can be using that up to the R1 stage in soybeans. Our BASF brought a product out called Sertan, and it is a pre-emergent herbicide, early post-herbicide for field corn. This is from salflufenacil and pyrosulfone. So that gives you group 14 and 15 use modes of action in the field. And I've heard a lot about Sertan over the winter. It's a novel encapsulation. So that means that the way that it's delivered to the field is safer to the crop when it is applied, particularly in that early post for field corn. There's a couple others that have come out. Beyond Extra, which has amazamox in it. That's the Beyond and Raptor herbicides, and it's labeled in clear field crops, including dry beans, peas, soybeans, and others. So keep that one in mind. We've also talked about Liberty Ultra, which is a concentrated form of glufosinate. Corteva has brought out Resicor Rev. This is a reformulation of their original Resicor, and it brings the acetochlor in an encapsulated formulation. Encapsulation, once again, keeps that acetochlor from burning our corn leaves, especially as the corn gets taller and you would be concerned about an overload of acetochlor down the whorl of the corn or the center part of the plant. There's some more. Tolvera is also now going to be labeled for use in wheat, and that brings bromoxynil with tolpyrrolate, and that's known as Impact as a different herbicide brand name. But it hasn't been used in cereals very often, so spring wheat, winter wheat, durum, as well as barley. So Tolvera would be one that potentially could be reviewed. So I hear that we have a missing weatherman who's on the line. So is Dean on a golf course somewhere?
No, I wish. I wish that was the case.
Would be nice if you were. I'm sure there are others who are taking advantage of that today.
I'm sure there is. And, well, you know what? We've got some decent weather our way because we've got a little bit of something for everybody except snow, and that's okay. But we do have some much-needed moisture that's coming this week, and then a couple more storms down the pike. We'll touch on that in just a bit. But we're looking at partly cloudy skies with temperatures currently generally in the upper 40s, and we should make it into the low to mid-50s today with winds much lighter than they were yesterday out of the northwest. Now, they'll turn to the southeast tonight, and they'll start to increase towards morning, and we'll drop down to a low in the lower 30s. And then for tomorrow, we're looking at windy conditions out of the southeast, 20 to 30 and gusty, with highs in the 60s. It's going to be a mild day tomorrow, mid to upper 60s. You're going out west, out towards Bismarck, we're looking at temperatures in the mid 70s out there, not bad. And then a cold front will swing into the state as we head into Thursday, and that's going to trigger off some showers and not widespread, but it looks like a tenth to a quarter of an inch from generally the eastern third into areas of western Minnesota. We'll take every little bit we can get. Then it turns breezy and cooler behind that to start off the Easter weekend on Friday, looking like temperatures only in the 40s. But Easter weekend, if you have any plans in the Dakotas, Minnesota, we're looking at good driving conditions. We don't have to worry about any snow if you're doing any holiday traveling. Temperatures around our area in the 50s on Saturday, and Easter Sunday looks like we'll have 60s with breezy conditions. Now, the LRC has the end of the month and the first 3 days in May pegged as a very, very wet period, and figure that will cycle back in about 40 to 42 days, which would put us second week in June. So it's crucial we get this moisture coming up. And looking at some of our medium range models, the American, the European model, and some of the other ones we use, they're now agreeing with the LRC, which they should, that some widespread rain across much of the state with about two to three storms between this week and that first few days in May, where much of the state is going to get blanketed with at least an inch of rain, in some spots quite a bit more than that. Going further south into South Dakota, southern Minnesota, some of those areas could be getting up to 3 inches of rain. And again, this is over a two-week time frame, but this is good news in terms of moisture, because we have been lacking moisture, obviously, around much of the area.
Oh, and I think right now folks are going to be looking at those forecasts pretty closely, trying to figure out what's going to be best to be doing, because you got to work around the moisture, right? Is the field ready? Yeah. Should I be ready? What's my plan here? So I think there's a lot of that that's going on.
Right. You said Jim was planning on planting the wheat, hopefully later this week, Bridget?
The anticipation that we might get it in this week before Easter, yes.
Okay. And before the heavier rain hits too.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, yeah, then you could be delayed a little bit longer on that.
Hey, speaking of before Easter, I read this last night. Have you ever heard the old wives' tale that you should plant your potatoes on Good Friday?
No, I've heard the old wives' tale. If it rains on Good Friday, it rains 7 consecutive Fridays after that, or maybe it's Easter Sunday. I have not heard the potato one, though.
Okay, so I just read this the other night. Or maybe it was last night, but in the discussion about you should plant your potatoes on Good Friday, and I always wondered why, because we have so many years where it's cold, right? And potatoes are not exactly a cold weather crop. They might not appreciate that. I found the answer is that it comes back from biblical times where people believed that Good Friday was the ground was holier because it was the day that Jesus hung on the cross and that his blood fertilized the soil. So that was a big stretch from what I thought it was, that it had anything to do with actual weather. Nope, it didn't. So
no,
really missed that one. That story in Sunday school. Nobody brought that one up.
I have never heard that one. Okay. Interesting. Well, there you go. Now you can continue to pass that down, right?
There you go. Now write that down, weatherman. So when somebody says, "Hey, aren't I supposed to plant on Good Friday?" Well, that's up to you. I'm going to need to look at the weather report. Usually, is what people say.
There you go.
Interesting enough, in the time that we have been talking, there is a press release out right now from USDA that U.S. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins joined the Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee, and they have submitted a waiver to USDA to ban soda and candy from and include, they want to remove it from SNAP benefits in Arkansas, but they can include hot rotisserie chicken. So that's breaking news out of USDA. Arkansas wants to ban candy and soda, but include rotisserie chicken in SNAP benefits.
Well, it's better for you.
It is. I find it interesting what the USDA is currently calling breaking news these days. I think there's a lot of farmers out there like, hold on, I have bigger questions.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's a slow news day, probably. That's why.
That might be the whole reason why. Absolutely. Speaking of, if you're getting ready, we've been talking about Easter. If you are going to be getting ready for Easter, there is indeed something that you might want to keep in mind with your holiday baking, and that would be some of the ancient grains. Now, most of us are incredibly familiar with using all-purpose flour, but if Dean recalls, we had a guest on from Michigan who was raising a grain called teff. Do you remember the granola that she sent us?
Right, yeah.
Okay. Teff as an ancient grain is one that's more drought tolerant, and that's why many of these ancient grains are indeed being looked at so much more closely. It's because folks are wanting to look for something with little drought tolerance. They want a difference in what they see for texture and flavor. So for instance, sorghum is now being used as more of a flour because it brings a slightly sweeter taste to your baked goods. Also, there's something called spelt, and we have folks that are wanting to use that. Buckwheat, I've heard of buckwheat. Buckwheat, you know, that was pancakes growing up, right? Buckwheat flour pancakes. But some of these ancient grains are really a little more innovative. If you are diagnosed with celiac disease and want to remain gluten-free, they are a great trend for you. Understand that they are not a one-for-one when it comes to baking. But what will happen is that you have to do a little bit different measurement because it will change not only the taste but the texture of what you're raising. So feel free to look for those things and use them as differently as you can.
See, now when you said buckwheat, the first thing I thought of was Little Rascals, but that's just because I'm old, so.
I forgot about that guy. All right. Well, I appreciate the fact that we got a much more detailed weather report than I can give. Dean, thank you for that. What we are going to do is we are going to dash into a break for a moment, because when we return, we have one of our super fans on the phone, Steve Bellow from New Jersey, and we'll visit with Steve when we come back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus. And we get a call today from our super fan, Steve Bellow in New Jersey. Steve, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you doing over there in North Dakota?
Doing quite well. It's less breezy today than yesterday. And okay, so you and I often compare what's going on in the weather. Like, it's not perfect what I get, you get 2 days later. So are you facing a nice spring day, or what's it look like?
It is very pleasant out. It's cloudy. The sun is trying to peep through, but overall, it's very pleasant. I got just a flannel shirt on. I love my leather jacket, but I like to leave it on the chair and just feel the air, you know, so to speak.
So, Steve, I know you're not exactly in a rural area of New Jersey, but do you start to see anything in the city as far as reports, like when planting is happening? Because you're in a high vegetable production state, do you ever, as a consumer, get made aware of what goes on around you in the state of New Jersey?
Not totally, to be really honest. I mean, I wouldn't know what to look for, to tell you straight up. Some things don't come to me either. the only thing I can really surmise is that, like, if I go shopping and I see, you know, local raised, you know, free range, whatever you want to call it. So I just kind of stand there, and like I've said in the past, I just say, wait, now I know what they're talking about.
And
in the past, I didn't.
So really what you're telling me is you've suddenly started to find a little bit more education in what in your grocery store shopping.
Yes. Yes. So thanks to you.
Hey, no problem. Glad to help. I mean, just today,
I get you into metal, you know.
Well, see, just today we've talked about the fact that there's a Peeps flavored milk. So if you actually find that on a grocery shelf, I don't think I'm going to find it in Fargo. But if you find it, I would love for you to send me a picture of that. I am dying to see what that thing looks like.
Slightly not Peeps flavor. I saw green milk at the store the other day. Does anyone know what that was?
That's
like a full. I leave it in the fridge for too long.
Well, it was like a full. They had like gallons of them. They were green.
Was it like a shamrock shake flavored type milk?
I don't know. I saw it from across the aisle and I went, ugh.
All right. Suddenly I'm going to get a lot of pictures of everybody's grocery store refrigerators of their different types of milk, which I'm okay with. I'd like to see that actually. So yes, that will, that will light up my life if it's green milk. Wow. So, Steve, as a regular listener, has there been any guests that have come up as of late where you've thought, wow, that was not something I was expecting? I'm always curious what people are thinking when they're listening to the show.
Well, definitely Dr. Emily Fox. There's always new vocabulary words and new, what's the best way I could put it? You know, interesting topics where I just scratch my head and go, that would never be talked about in New Jersey. Not that I'm aware of.
As soon as you said Dr. Fox, I saw the look on Addison's face through the glass.
She's always got some kind of nightmare to hold up as an example. Not,
yeah.
No, it's not.
I love having her on the show. Such a delightful person. But the cow in a jar incident, I'll never think about that a lot.
She'd be great for death metal bands if they need lyrics. You know, she's got some good information.
That I wasn't expecting to hear, that she would be someone who could write lyrics. I'm really liking where this conversation is going, you two.
Well, there are some bands that are quite like that.
Okay, fair enough.
Not me, because I do instrumental.
Well, so Steve, you give me the exact opportunity to tell folks that, you know, when you have topics and questions, things that stand out, by all means, let us know, because we would love to be able to visit with about that topic and find people who want to visit about it. It's a wild to see what all goes on in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So,
definitely.
Okay, so to the two of you, to Addison and Steve, tomorrow I have a guest coming, and I will verify that I do, because Addison just laughed and said, oh, I don't know. Tomorrow I have a guy who raises llamas in Minnesota. All right, so what's everybody's opinion on llamas? What do we think about them, and what questions should I be sure to ask him?
Do they really spit at people?
I'm going to ask if they really spit at people.
Do they spit, and why do they spit?
Okay. Okay, we'll ask that. Steve?
You got me there. I mean, Addison's got me beat there, so you win this round.
Okay. All right. Well, then, later on this week, I've also got Phil Kaspari. He is an extension agent in Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does he live there of his own free volition, or?
He's got family originally from North Dakota. So really, if you already make it in North Dakota, why wouldn't you go to Alaska?
Just in case we're not cold enough.
Right.
I suppose I understand.
Yeah. Now, we've already, back in early March, we had the only dairy farm in Alaska as a guest, and they were pretty interesting to talk to. Now we're going to see what other things get raised in Alaska. What their cropping system looks like and what their summer growing season might look like as well. So there is always something different, you might say, that we get to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, guys. Next topic that we haven't necessarily had a chance to talk about this week, orange juice. Have either one of you noticed that there is less orange juice being seen at the grocery store, that there's maybe not your favorite flavor like you once had it, or your favorite brand?
Yeah, I got to be honest. That's something I never realized. I'm going to have to, again, you're going to send me on a field trip to see if there's orange juice and Peeps. So
that's right, Steve. I'm giving you homework right now. Okay, here's the deal. We are seeing less orange juice production in the United States. A lot of our production is having to come in from Brazil. Okay, why? Wow. There is a pest. It's a little bug. And we've actually had a citrus agronomist on. Gene McAvoy joined us probably about 2 years ago. And he talked about this then, and it was citrus greening, and it is a pest that infects the orange and then makes the fruit non-viable so that it can't be harvested, right? So it's like it rots on the tree. In addition to that, last fall, Hurricane Milton went through the greatest citrus growing areas of Florida, knocked all sorts of oranges off the trees. They were not able to be harvested. And since 2025, more than 50% of citrus production has, or more than 50% of the citrus production has fallen in the state of Florida. So they are having trouble bringing trees back after all of this devastating weather. Because when you think about it, it's not like a corn crop, right? You can't just run back out there this year and plant trees and you can harvest them this fall, right? So we are now up against the clock on trying to get more orange trees growing, but in the meantime, we are having to import concentrate and so forth in order to keep up with our demand here in the United States. So the citrus industry, a little under fire. Okay.
That's interesting.
Okay, guys, I'm sending you to the grocery store to look for the Peeps milk, to look for ancient grains breads, and now you got to go check out where your orange juice is coming from. This is quite a shopping list, gentlemen.
While I'm there, I'm going to pick up Mitchell ice cream.
If anyone happens to see the green milk at their local Walmart, make sure to text those images to Bridget's phone directly.
That's true, because if there's something green that comes from Dr. Emily Fox, the vet, Addison gets nervous. So, all right. Steve, thanks for joining us. Addison, thanks for all your help today. Stay tuned for Jay Thomas. He's next.